This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening, this is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio, and as guests this evening, we are privileged to be speaking with Jamie Lee Jones and with her attorney, Todd Kelly. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Jamie, you have been in the news. Some people know your story. We'll get into it a little bit, and then we want to talk about what you're doing. But could you give me a little bit of your background? How old are you? Where did you grow up? And how did you end up working for Halliburton in Iraq?
Okay, I'm 23 years old now, and I grew up in Dallas. Well, I was born in Dallas, Texas, so I am from Texas, but we moved around a lot because my dad was in management working for Verizon Business. So I have moved to Virginia, Indiana, Texas, and now I'm in California. So,
And you worked for Halliburton in Texas and then in Iraq, is that correct?
Do what? I'm sorry.
How did you end up at Halliburton?
Oh, okay. Well, my dad was an IT tech, and I'd always watch him fix computers, and I admired his intelligence, and I wanted to start fixing computers as well, do what he did. I really adored it. So I started to work with computers, and I worked at Hewlett-Packard, and then I started working for Halliburton in Houston, and as a promotional opportunity and also to help my mom, who was sick at home, I went and took a position in Iraq.
So they gave you a promotion, but you had to go to Iraq.
Right.
I know, Todd, that you would prefer that Jamie not go into this, but briefly, for those who don't know the background, this story has been in the news, and Jamie has testified last month before Congress. She was apparently raped by her colleagues in Iraq and has been unable to find any justice following that. Could you, Todd, give us a brief summary of what happened?
Absolutely. And I think that because I had asked Jamie not to go into the facts of her case, one of the things that she didn't mention is that one of the reasons for leaving and going to Iraq actually had to do with escaping a situation here in Houston. Again, I have asked Jamie not to go into the details of her case on the air, but after arriving in Iraq, she was there for a period of about 4 days. I mean, in fact, this incident that we are here to talk about occurred on the evening of her fourth day. She was in the Green Zone in Baghdad and had stepped outside of the barracks. Actually, let me back up a little bit. Before this fourth day, she had complained about the barracks situation that she was living in. She was in a barracks which was predominantly male, and in the four-day period that she was there, she saw no other females. She had complained about this because when she was still in Houston, she had been promised a more private living quarters that she would share with one other woman. That was not provided, and she had complained and asked to be moved. That request was denied. She was told to go to the spa, which, to our knowledge, there is no spa in the Green Zone. But nonetheless, her request went unheeded, and on her fourth day in the country, she stepped outside of her barracks to take a phone call because the reception was better. Saw a couple of her co-workers sitting outside. They invited her over to share a drink. One of the people that was identified only as a firefighter for Halliburton KBR made her a drink. She accepted the drink, thinking that she could trust the folks that she was with there because they were all fighting for the same team. Two sips later, Jamie does not recall the rest of that evening. When she awoke the next morning, Jamie found her body badly bruised. She had been raped both vaginally and anally. One of her rapists was brazen enough to still be lying in the bed in the room. It's interesting to note that when she woke up, she was back in her room, and the key had been around her neck the night before. Jamie then was, as I said, when she woke, she was still under the influence of whatever had been put into her drink. It took her a while to figure out what had happened. By the time that she did, she went to the KBR clinic, the Halliburton KBR clinic. They then sent her over to the Army CASH, the Army surgical hospital there, and a rape kit analysis was performed. Does that tell you enough to get us started, or would you like the rest of the story?
No, absolutely. I think that, you know, there is actually a great deal of information available to people on the peoplespeakradio.net, all over the internet, and at Jamie's website, jamiesfoundation.org, J-A-M-I-E-S, foundation.org. And, Jamie, first of all, it's incredible that after the sort of thing you've been through, you're speaking with us on the radio, in front of Congress, with people around the country, and that you're doing something substantive about this. And I get the impression that your story is maybe, sadly, not that unique. What have you found as you've looked into this issue?
Well, I started the Jamie Lee Foundation because I wanted to reach out to other victims, because obviously since this happened within 4 days of me being there, I assumed that there had to have been more women. Well, my assumption became a reality when women started coming forward through the Jamie Lee Foundation, and since then I've just really wanted to make it my life's goal to make sure that I can help prevent this from happening in the future. I can't really do much for what has happened to all of us in the past, but I can try to, try to pass some laws, and I've been working on a few petitions that are on the website that people can sign to take action to try to tighten the jurisdictional loopholes that are stopping women from getting justice in the criminal court system. So I think that it is so important for people to get justice when they have been involved in a criminal act against them. So they need to have justice in order for them to be able to move on with their lives.
And have you found that other women have similar experiences with this same company in the same sort of situation?
Yes. There's been several women that have come forward, and there's also a lot of women that have been harassed also. And there's also a couple of men that have come forward after they have been attacked. One guy, he was beaten up, and then they threw him in a shipping container. So there's been some men that have come forward also.
I know that that ABC 2020 covered your story and also that of another woman with a somewhat similar experience, and she's not one who's approached your foundation. So there,
right.
So there clearly are others out there that you don't know about, and I know that there are many that you do. How common a problem do you think this is?
I think it's a very common problem. I mean, there's 180,000 contractors overseas. There's approximately 20,000 of those are females. And so I think that this is a huge problem because the perpetrators that are doing this know that they're doing this in a lawless environment. So until we get some laws pushed over there for these men to be held accountable, I don't think that it's going to stop happening.
Well, again, to repeat the website that people should go to take action on this, it's jamiesfoundation.org, J-A-M-I-E-S, foundation.org. This is the People Speak Radio. I'm David Swanson speaking with Jamie Lee Jones and with Todd Kelly, who's serving as her attorney. You are welcome to call in with your questions for either of our guests at 530-876-9916. That's 530-876-9916. And again, at her attorney's request, we are not going to put Jamie through discussing the details of what happened to her. But we are going to talk further about what is happening in the broader picture. And I guess my initial response, as most people's might be, Jamie and Todd, is if there's a credible accusation of a rape here in the United States, usually somebody ends up in prison.
Right, exactly.
In Iraq, we're talking about a nation under the control of the United States, and we're talking about the Green Zone, this sub-city in Baghdad that's completely controlled by the United States. So we're talking about an employee of not just a what used to be a U.S. company and now moved to Dubai so it doesn't pay taxes, but the company that our vice president is profiting from, that he used to run. Why should this be the Wild West? Why should there not be any laws in place in this location?
Well, obviously, David, we believe that there should be, and it's interesting that you talk about the lawlessness of this environment. It's certainly one of the major issues about this case. The people who have come forward after hearing Jamie's story, and some who had come forward prior to hearing Jamie's story, have talked to me. Many of them have sworn out affidavits that paint a picture of repeated abuses and repeated efforts to hide those abuses, complete with stories like Jamie's of locking them into shipping containers and placing them under armed guard, firing those people who would complain or those people who would come forward and try to make the situation better.
A number of people
have complained about these issues for years with both of these companies, with Halliburton and with KBR, only to find themselves terminated or sent off to more dangerous, hostile environments for having made such reports.
Now, KBR is a subsidiary of Halliburton, correct?
It was until, I believe it was April, it may have been March of 2007, but certainly at the time when Jamie was raped and when most of these women and men who observed it have come forward, yes, KBR was a subsidiary of Halliburton.
And when you say repeated offenses, are you referring to specific individuals committing these sorts of acts repeatedly?
In one case, I have specific evidence of an individual who was reported sexually harassing one individual. The victim then was fired, only to have that very same individual then sexually assault the replacement for the fired victim. So yes, that is certainly happening. We believe happening more than in one specific instance, but we know of one specific instance where that has occurred.
It's interesting because Halliburton has a habit of firing whistleblowers for blowing the whistle on contract fraud, not just on these sorts of crimes. Jamie, I know you were only there for 4 days before this happened, but you've been in touch with all of these other women. What is the environment like that creates the situation where people feel free to commit these sorts of horrendous acts?
Well, like Todd has always has stated, that I believe that there is a boys will be boys attitude that does permeate the environment and does make people I think that most of the time, if someone does sexually harass someone and it gets reported, then no one really cares. And it seems as though people just turn their backs on issues like that. So it is a very hostile environment for people to work in, especially people who are being harassed on a day-to-day basis.
It's incredible to me that there are no laws there. Let me find out what some of our listeners think of this situation.
Okay.
The call-in number to the People Speak Radio is 530-876-9916. Again, that's 530-876-9916. This is David Swanson at the PeopleSpeakRadio.net, speaking with Jamie Lee Jones and with her attorney, Todd Kelly. Am I correct in understanding that when Paul Bremer, as the head of the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, gave out decrees, one of them was called Order Number 17, and it effectively said that U.S. companies, U.S. contractors working in Iraq, their employees are not subject to Iraqi law, and that apparently they are not subject to U.S. law either. Is that the root of this problem?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily the root of the problem, and to be honest, that you know, decree number 17 is actually referring, as I understand it, more to the criminal aspect of these cases than to the civil. That certainly was mentioned in the congressional hearing in which Jamie testified. It was mentioned by one of the congressmen. I would accept it as true, but I certainly cannot verify that because it's not directly pertinent to the civil lawsuit that I represent Jamie in.
So I can talk
a little bit about it. I know that there is a legal blind spot overseas. The Uniform Code of Military Justice cannot hold contractors to account because there's a clause in it that says that they can be held accountable if there's a declared war in order, but this obviously isn't a quote-unquote declared war. And there is a clause for the Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act passed in 2000 may give the State Department some jurisdiction in prosecuting military contractors in Iraq, but it's still murky whether or not jurisdiction would in fact be under the State Department's jurisdiction. There has been a number of civilian misconduct cases referred to the State Department, yet there has not been a single prosecution. So, anyways, there's a petition that you can go to and sign for the H.R. 2740 MEJA Expansion and Enforcement Act of 2007, which, if it is passed through the Senate, has already been passed through the House. It would make FBI establish ground to investigate units in Iraq, and it should close the loophole more and definitely have criminal contractors be held accountable.
That would be remarkable. I know you're familiar with the video of the president addressing this issue that is just so ludicrous. President Bush was asked by a college student, what law do these contractors in Iraq fall under? Do they fall under U.S. law or Iraqi law or what? And he professed to have no idea. What was your reaction to seeing the president take that position?
It really outraged me, but hopefully he knows what's going on now. Hopefully he's researched by now.
I would agree with Jamie. It was outrageous that he didn't know, but what was more outrageous is that his tone and tenor seemed to indicate that he didn't care. It wasn't just
exactly.
That he didn't know, but he didn't seem
exactly.
To care.
We do have people emailing in their questions here, and Seth from California has emailed asking a question that I should have asked, and that is, how long have you been litigating this case, and when did this happen? This was not, you testified before Congress last month, but this happened
right.
A couple of years ago, correct?
Let me address that one, Jamie, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
The incident occurred in July of 2005. Jamie then, following that, as you might imagine, Jamie was initially and more concerned about getting treated than she was about anything else. I mean, she was brutally beaten. Her breast implants were ripped. Her pectoral muscles were torn. She required reconstructive surgery and still requires a reconstructive surgery. So she was not out pounding the pavement right away looking for a lawyer and looking for justice. At first, she was looking for healing. And then as she came out of that, after a number of months and started looking for justice, she first went to back to the people who had taken the rape kit. She went back to the investigator who had first spoken with her, and she was seeking justice through the criminal courts. Meanwhile, she did seek a civil attorney. I have a predecessor attorney on the case, and I say I. There's actually I'm not alone in this, and I should mention that Stephanie Morris and Paul Waldner are both involved in this case as well. I mean, I have the privilege of speaking here with Jamie, but I'm not acting alone. But the
reason why he's speaking is he's on my board of directors through the Jamie Lee Foundation also.
But
good.
But the bottom line for Jamie is she came out with everything that she knew how to come out with very early on. And after the lawsuit was filed, after I got involved and Stephanie Morris got involved and Paul Waldner got involved, we filed the lawsuit, and it wasn't until the lawsuit was filed and therefore available on the public PACER system that news media picked it up. And the first news media to pick it up was the Houston Chronicle. who then found that story. They ran that story, and then it was picked up by other media. And ultimately, you know, Brian Ross in 2020 decided that he wanted to do a story on this. And the timing of the release of the media, and this is something that I know that there's been some criticism about, but the interesting thing is that, you know, all the criticism that's been hurled at Jamie for waiting as long as she did, it's ludicrous when you think of the fact that we have no control, none, over when the media decides to release a story. And so the story was released by the media when the media decided to do it.
Understood. We have Mike from California asking a question that you've just begun to answer, and that is, what is your opinion of how the recent media attention has been? What sort of job has our public communication system performed in this case?
You know, I think they've gotten the story out, and I think that's very important. And I think, you know, Jamie, you may want to respond to this as well. But I think really, especially for the fact that there are a number of victims out there who, but for hearing Jamie's bravery, would never have come forward. And I think in that vein, there's going to be a lot of people who get some healing because Jamie decided to come forward.
Yeah, I'm very happy that this story is finally out there and that it gave others the opportunity to get their stories out there and get attorneys and know what to do. Some women just had no idea, like, what needed to be done. Some people, I've heard this a lot, that women will come and say, well, I don't have the money for an attorney or something like that. Well, you know, a lot of attorneys would take this on and, you know, take a percentage of whatever. But, you know, some women just don't even know where to go. So I think that it's a really good thing that the story is out there, and at least it gives us the opportunity to try and pass some laws and really be proactive and with the foundation on trying to get some laws passed over there to protect contractors in Iraq.
It sounds like exactly what you should be doing, and it's amazing that you're doing it so openly. We actually have a caller on the line, Matthew from Los Angeles. I assume that's L.A. and Los Angeles. Could be Louisiana. Let's go to Matthew from L.A.
Hey, David. It's Matthew from Los Angeles. I apologize if this was covered earlier, but besides initially getting Jamie out of her troubles, Representative Poe, has he done anything further, or has there been any other congressional action or statements made by any other representatives, and what type of support is there in that vein?
Yeah, Congressman Ted Poe and I have been speaking a lot by email, and also one of his legislative counsel assistants has been talking to me a whole lot. We're trying to pass the Jamie Lee Jones Act of 2008, and that'll force contractors to disclose statistical data in annual reports of the violations and criminal acts committed on each housing and working location in country to employees. Because, like, if you went to a college and you were going to actually live on campus, they would disclose that information to you under the Gene Cleary Act. So this type of thing will help people understand and make more educated decisions on whether or not to continue employment or to pursue employment with these contractors, because I think that, you know, having this information available can help people make better educated decisions. So he's been working with that, and he's also been trying to get a protocol overseas with the handling of forensic evidence such as rape kits, so that never again will a woman have the rape kit handed over to KBR security, because that is so important. That's probably one of the most important things that he's working on right now. So he has been helping a whole lot. So
one of the other things that Congressman Poe has done, just to follow up on that, is that he has kind of broken with the pack from a political standpoint, and he signed on to the Fairness and Arbitration Act of 2007, which is H.R. 3010, in large part because of the fact that Halliburton and KBR have made a real effort in this case to force Jamie out of the courtroom and into an arbitration proceeding, which would be, you know, quick, quiet, silent, and very unlikely to ever see justice there. And Congressman Poe has broken with his party to sign on to that act, which to me shows an incredible amount of courage to do that. And so that's another way that he has helped not only Jamie, but a lot of victims in that regard.
I really do think that he's a hero.
This is Ted Poe, P-O-E, a Republican from Texas, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And he was your representative before you went to Iraq?
Yes.
I want to go to additional callers, but just so we understand, there is a civil case still pending, but KBR wants to send it to arbitration rather than a court. And who would appoint the arbitrator?
The arbitrator actually was provided by a panel provided by the American Arbitration Association, and the arbitration panel there's a deselection process of which arbitrators you don't want. And there was some say, I mean, I should be very fair in this, there was some say from both sides. The point of the matter is, one of the evils of arbitration is that only one of the two parties is ever going to come back to face that arbitrator again. The fact of the matter is, Jamie Jones is likely to ever arbitrate one case in her life if this has to go to arbitration. Halliburton and KBR will arbitrate hundreds of cases a year. And so the natural inclination for any human being who gets their business is to not be deselected by a company that you know you're going to see again. While the arbitration is shrouded in colors of fairness, the reality of it is it's a very unfair process.
And so what's the timeline you're looking at in this case? What's the next step, and when might it happen?
Actually, we are waiting for the judges to rule now as to whether or not we are going to arbitration or whether or not we are going to be allowed to have Jamie's Seventh Amendment right to trial by jury upheld.
And that's not a decision the public can have any influence on, I imagine.
And not at this point, but they can certainly write to their congressman and put pressure on Congress to pass H.R. 3010, and they could have say in what happens in a future case.
Right. And if you go to jamiesfoundation.org, you can petition to Congress to pass the Fairness and Arbitration Act. So the public can definitely make things happen.
Not to rain on any parades, because I certainly hope that such legislation is enacted, but the current president has not been known to sign any good bills into law, and he's got those vetoes going like a machine gun. What are the prospects for putting this law on the books?
You know, you've identified the problem. As far as percentages go, who knows? I mean, this president got into office and he swore to limit individuals' rights by passing what he called tort reform, and he's done a good job of trying to do that. So it's very, very difficult for us to, in the year 2008, to talk about what are the prospects for getting an individual justice in this country who needs it. We certainly hope that that people will start to see that what they called tort reform was an evil that was perpetrated on this country, and we hope that they'll start to turn it around. This is just one aspect of a much broader picture. I don't know what the prospects are.
Well, we do have that, as you mentioned, that branch of our government, the Congress, where we have some representation, and Jamie testified before a congressional committee, the House Judiciary Committee, last month. What did you expect going into that, and then what did you get out of it, Jamie?
Well, I expected to show Congress that there is a big problem over there in regards to forensic evidence and to not getting criminals, perpetrators, held accountable under any type of law. So I wanted to bring that to them, and also talk about the arbitration, because not only can we not get justice in criminal courts, but neither in civil courts as well. So I was able to get that out there, and I did like the response from all of Congress. I think that every member on that House Judiciary Committee did say some really good things, and everyone was apologetic, and I was very happy with how it went. So I hope to see something come out of that quickly.
Now, Halliburton is and KBR are employed by the State Department, employed by our government, and And I know that some of the Congress members at that hearing expressed the belief that this crime could be prosecuted under U.S. law, and yet we haven't seen any action from the State Department or from the Department of Justice, correct?
Correct. They didn't even come to the hearing. Perhaps we could have asked them the same question, why has there not been any prosecutions out of Iraq, but we didn't get that opportunity.
In fact, Congressman Conyers subpoenaed the Justice Department, but they preferred not to show up, right?
Yeah, I believe
I don't know that it was actually a subpoena, but he certainly invited them to show.
I don't know what your opinion is of these broader issues, but there are numerous investigations of crimes underway in congressional committees where they run up against this wall of the Bush administration refusing to show up, refusing to answer Freedom of Information Act requests, refusing to comply with subpoenas, and of course announcing that they will not enforce contempt citations. And yet Congress has sort of voluntarily removed its only power by saying it won't impeach anybody. And yet, you know, we have I was just watching C-SPAN before getting on here. Congressman Wexler from Florida is pushing hard to start impeaching the vice president. And I wonder what you think of, what would you say if you sat down to lunch with Dick Cheney, Jamie? Because this is a man who profits from this company, which he's moved to Dubai. So we pay tens of billions of dollars in no-bid contracts for a company that commits these sorts of crimes with impunity, and they don't pay any taxes.
David, if I could interrupt, and I know that you certainly don't intend to harm Jamie in any way by asking a question like that, but I can see that an answer to a question like that might come back to haunt her. And so I'm quite a ways away, but Jamie, my advice is that we pass on that.
Right. I don't want to step on anyone's toes, I guess.
Well, it wouldn't have harmed you to come out with a glowing defense of the vice president, so I'll leave it at that. But there are a couple of people who have emailed in questions that may be more appropriate than my own, and let's see. Sam from Texas would like to know if the rape kit in your case has completely disappeared.
Let me answer that one.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay, Jamie. Again, the rape kit was reported at one point in time as having been having completely disappeared. It has later been reported to us that portions of the rape kit have now been found. We've yet to see that rape kit. But what we know, or what we've been reported is missing, are the photographs that were taken of Jamie, and the only legible copy, or the top copy, of the Xerox stack, which shows the location of the bruises on Jamie's body. Those are the parts that are missing, and certainly the photographs, I don't think they need a lot of explanation about what their evidentiary value is. The rape kit was handed over by the Army physician who did the rape kit to the KBR security personnel. We don't necessarily think that there was any malice on the Army doctor's part in doing that. But after handing it over to who is now a defendant in this case, portions of that rape kit have disappeared.
And so this is why you're pressing for a standard that would not turn a rape kit over to the company involved.
Right. Because that would be like getting raped at a mall, having a rape kit done, and then handing the rape kit over to the mall guard. People just don't do that here in the state.
Good point. We do have another caller on the line, Abdul from Washington D.C. Let's go to Abdul's call.
Hi, Jamie. I am truly appreciative that you're here sharing your case. I'm not sure if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
We can hear you.
Perhaps this is a question to your lawyer, actually, Ms. Lay, but it seems that a fundamental law of criminal proceeding is being violated. The presumption of innocence is is quite shattered with the existence of the evidence mentioned. My question is, why is it that the court can get away with such nonsensical rationale and seemingly brushing this away? And what legal justification, excuses, are they giving for immunizing these barbarians from these charges?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. If I understand your question correctly, you're referring to why have the rapists not been brought to justice in a criminal proceeding? And the bottom line or the bottom answer to that is no explanation has ever been given. In fact, they tell us that the wheels are turning, albeit very slowly. And I think that's really one of the major problems here. We are 2.5 years after Jamie was raped and reported it, and yet we haven't had any sort of an indictment, no significant reporting back of findings, and this is 2.5 years later. But to answer your question, as far as what are they saying, they are silent.
Jamie, do you want to speak to that?
I think that he said it all.
Okay, let's do this. We need to take a break in the middle of this hour program. This is David Swanson with Jamie Lee Jones and her attorney, Todd Kelly. We'll be back for another half hour. We'll be taking your calls at 530-876-9916. That's 530-876-9916. This is the People Speak Radio at thepeoplespeakradio.net.
Hi, this is Jamie Lee with the Jamie Lee Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping United States citizens and legal residents who are victims of crime while working abroad for government contractors. We demand government contract corporations and government entities to act responsibly and be held accountable to provide a work environment free of sexual harassment and limit the potential for abuse. We insist contractors to disclose criminal activity to employees and applicants so that they can make educated decisions regarding their safety. We work towards a day when all U.S. citizen contractors will be able to work without fear and safety concerns.
Invite you to a new International Politics Lobby 8, a chat room on Paltalk, the world's largest online community with over 4 million users. Talk or text to people from all over the world. Participate in discussion and debate about politics and other issues. Or just sit back and watch and listen. Open 24/7, a new International Politics Lobby 8 in the Social Issues Politics category on Paltalk.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of science, spirituality, activism, politics, literature, healing, entertainment, and education. Make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak. Tuesdays, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
Save you and me.
And we are back. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio. We are here this evening with Jamie Lee Jones and with Todd Kelly, who is serving as her attorney in a civil suit against KBR, former subsidiary of Halliburton. Jamie is the victim of an assault by her colleagues in Iraq. The number to call in if you have questions for Jamie or for Todd Kelly is 530-876-9916. That's 530-876-9916. And we've been receiving questions via email. Don in Alaska would like to know, Jamie, how is your foundation financed?
Right now it's financed 100% through donations. So if anyone wants to help, they can donate to www.jamiesfoundation.org.
And is that tax deductible?
Yes, it is.
And also
you can call in. If you wanted to make a donation, you can call us at 1-866-512-2588, and that is a toll-free number.
And the purpose of the foundation is to assist women or men who are victims of these sorts of crimes.
Yes, uh-huh.
Great. And I have a question of my own. What sort of advice do you offer to women who may be not speaking up or who are and are not getting anywhere?
Well, right now we have been helping them go and get legal advice through one of our board members, Todd Kelly, and he's been assisting most of the women legally. And I've been referring them to various people, such as like how to get workman's comp if they need it and various things like that. But mainly we are trying to demand that government contractors and government entities are acting responsibly and be held accountable to provide a work environment free of sexual harassment and limit the potential for abuse. So we're trying to become like more of a watchdog corporation to make sure that these issues are addressed by legislation. I know that I can help these women, but I can't help exactly what happened to them in the past, but I can stop it from happening in the future. So I believe that there's strength in numbers. So when women come forward, I can help them by referring them to what legal actions they can take, and also they can actually help also pass some legislation. So.
And clearly getting these issues out into the media so that more people become aware that this happens and that it happens more than just once has to help, if anything can, influence our officials in Washington. And in that regard, Nellie, if I'm pronouncing it right, from Houston, has heard that this will be your last interview and would like to know if that's true.
No, I don't think that is true, but I don't know where she got that from.
Okay. Well, you haven't been doing too many, and so we're privileged that you're here with us this evening. And I'm glad to hear you'll keep doing more.
If I could explain that, Jamie has today taken my advice on these sorts of things, and I hope that she will continue to do so. One of the reasons why the interviews have been limited is because while I've asked Jamie not to do so, I certainly read the blogs that so many people put out. And, you know, when Jamie makes a comment on the air that she had two sips of a drink before she passed out, and then she makes a comment on another show that says she had two drinks before she passed out, you know, for a South Texas girl to say that, it means exactly the same thing. But I've read the blogs where people think that now instead of two sips, she had two full, complete drinks. And so there's some misinterpretation. And for that reason, we're very cautious about letting people, you know, start picking apart what she said and taking it to the point where they are misconstruing what she said. So, you know, so far Jamie has been very, very good about, you know, accepting my advice on things like that. And even though we both know that she wasn't saying anything that was inaccurate, you know, but her language, you know, being from South Texas may not be the same way that it's construed from other parts of the country and elsewhere. So there's been a lot of concern about people misconstruing what she's saying, and that's part of the reason why we're careful about these interviews.
That seems like reasonable advice. Let's bring in a caller on this conversation. Steve in Santa Fe, New Mexico, has a question. Go ahead, Steve.
Jamie, first of all, as a Vietnam vet, I'd like to welcome you home. Welcome home.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Steve.
And I'm very sorry that you had to go through this horrible event that that now is national news. But I think it's a can of worms. And I realize your lawyer, you know, he's right in what he's saying, but yet at the same time, as a veteran, I'm appalled by what he says, that I have to be careful.
Right.
You know, I mean, that I have to worry about that my government is going to take what I say and lie about it. And I'm sorry they did that. I mean, that this whole scenario ends up being like a horrible event for you. It has to be horrible, I agree. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for doing it. I mean, most people would look at the problems and, as your lawyer saying, go, hey, wait a minute, I don't need to get myself into this.
Right.
But you have chosen to do so, and I applaud you for it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for your support. I really mean,
you're a very good American, and you're doing what an American should do, I believe, is speaking out against the horrible atrocities that's going on that you experienced. And again, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Steve. Let's let Jamie respond.
Oh, yeah, that means so much to me. I mean, I really appreciate it that you're calling and with your support, and thank you very, very much.
We have questions pouring in. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio with Jamie Lee Jones and Todd Kelly. The call-in number is 530-876-9916. Noah from Iowa would like to know, Jamie, if you have found members of Congress willing to work with you and your foundation and to put government resources behind helping you. Obviously, you've had some experience with the House Judiciary Committee, at least. Mm-hmm. Is that a question you can speak to?
Yeah, there have been a few members of Congress. I'm in touch with the Congressman Ted Poe's office and Slaughter's office, and both of them have been working with me to help push some laws that govern, that umbrella criminal contractors, and various issues in my case, such as, you know, how forensic evidence is handled and different things like that. So I have congressmen that have really stepped up and tried to help the foundation and try to help me make these laws happen, and they help me try and pass them. So I think that's really good.
And that you mentioned another Congress member, that's Congresswoman Slaughter, a Democrat from New York?
Yes.
That's interesting. Here's another question that's come in that's interesting. What, Jamie, would you say to anyone considering going overseas and working for a private military contractor?
I'd like my attorney to answer that one.
Good call.
Well, I think the first advice I would give anyone that's considering doing that is take the contract to a lawyer. There's a lot of hidden things in that contract that you're not being told, and I think you need to look at it. I think you need to strongly consider everything that you do before you do it. Like the caller from New Mexico, Steve, I am a veteran as well. I support and defend the Constitution of this country. And I applaud all of the people who go over in support of what they see as supporting this country. And so I support them, and I think that they do so for patriotic and very valid reasons. But I think that they need to do so with their eyes wide open, and with all of the ramifications of what they do having been explained to them.
And when you're looking at that employment contract, is an arbitration clause something that you're looking for?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is signing away your right to a trial by jury if you do so willingly and knowingly And of course, there's some allegations that we have in these cases that I don't want to talk about specifically on the air, but go into this thing with your eyes wide open and look carefully for arbitration provisions and other provisions in the contract.
Excellent advice. We're running up against the clock here. Then there's a pile of questions coming in by email. Jamie, has your new foundation partnered with any other organizations?
No, not yet. It's not, but we want to partner with the UN, and we've gotten an offer, and I'm going to try to get see that through. So.
Very interesting. Here's a broader question beyond what happens with contractors in Iraq, and this was sent in anonymously. Jamie, what do you believe the normal person can or should do to change the perceptions of women and rape in America?
I think that comes with education. I think that, through my website under the victim services page, I've offered a lot of education for people, because I think that a lot of that is the lack of education. So if people read more about rape and what it entails and the reasons why it wouldn't be the victim's fault, it shouldn't matter what she was wearing or, if she was out late at night, it doesn't justify rape. I mean, none of that justifies rape. And I've heard different things come in through the foundation email, if you have a drink, then you ask for it, or if you wear this, you ask for it, different things like that. And I think that in order to change those perceptions, you'd have to educate people. So that's what I'm trying to do also through the foundation. Because, absolutely no one asked for what I went through. I mean, my pectoral muscles or ribs and everything else. I mean, no one asked to be raped. So I think that would be one of the main ways to change those perceptions.
Very well said. I can't imagine anything much more important. And I assume you're also intent on educating the American public about the fact that we have these tens of thousands of contractors serving us in foreign countries to whom no laws apply. I wonder, do you have any grasp of what percentage of the American public even knows about this situation?
No, I don't. But if anyone wants to learn more, under the education page at jamiesfoundation.org, it covers what arbitration is, why there's jurisdictional problems, and various issues like that. So, if you want to learn more about it, then you can go there.
Terrific. Maybe time for one more question that I just got by email. Have you felt that you've been shunned in any way by any people or groups for the allegations you've made?
I think that my work is overall empowering. I'm helping give other victims a voice. So it wouldn't really matter to me if I am or not. I mean, what I'm doing is worth doing it, so.
That's terrific. It's amazing to me that you're able to speak this way about something this horrific and turn it into something that hopefully will end up benefiting a great many people. We're out of time for the hour. I want to thank you, Jamie Lee Jones and Todd Kelly, for joining us at the People Speak Radio. And again, Jamie's website, and this is a foundation that you might want to consider looking into and supporting, is jamiesfoundation.org, J-A-M-I-E-S. Foundation.org. And Jamie, I heard a rumor that there may be a book and maybe even a film coming out about your experience, so we'll be watching for those. Our guest next week is Driss Temsamani, the author and the founder of SOS Morocco. David Swanson with PeopleSpeakRadio.net. Thank you, Todd, and thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the seawall, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.